Mr. Donnelly, Rio 7. We got to the point where you'd landed on the 6th of June and you just got your way across the beach under indirect German artillery fire. What's the next thing you remember about...
When we landed, we were to head towards... Le Sur. That's where we were to head for. To meet for Le Sur. So when we came up the beachhead, of course, we came across these little farmhouses, but no civilians about at all. But a lot of German dead. And we went up as far as we could, and we entered the zoo without any opposition. Then we were told to make for the village of Bacage. And we got so far, we got there, we were told to halt. Now we landed on Gold Beach. Now we were to the right of the Canadians, and to the left of the Yanks, and Omaha. So as I say, Ireland was perfectly good. But I see no Frenchmen at all. The French two police cars were directly deserted by the flare and whatnot. I don't know, but I didn't see any French people at all. Now, when we left England, when we got these new tanks, all the crews were changed. And I had a new officer, I just joined the regiment, Lieutenant Walker. He's an older man, he was maybe in his 30s anyway, or he was younger, he was an old man, but he was quite a nice lad. So, this was connected to the kind, but the COIs were sent in first.
And COI meaning?
City of London Yeomanry. And they massacred. He went in, lying ahead, into the centre crowd, and apparently this German officer had come down and shot the first one, shot the last one, and he went down and shot the whole blinking lot. So they got practically about two. You may have heard about it, but they were disbanded, I think, after that, because they were in that kind of way. So as I said, we had this Captain Walker, he quite a nice one.
Now he was your troop commander or
my tank commander.
Tank commander.
Conky went to another tank.
Conky Harland.
Conky Harland was the sergeant major for England. But that was only once we were assured. Once we started again, he came as a tank commander and another tank. So we were two
and by the way, you were still what were you at this time?
Gunner operator.
And a trooper.
A trooper, yeah. So we landed, I said, really good cars, and the CO guy got hammered. And then the Germans started an attack. Now, I don't know where the rest is going, but our troop was left on a little hillock. And Lieutenant Walker was our first engagement with a Tiger tank. First time I'd seen one. I heard about them. And I don't know what this Tiger tank was thinking about. It came, where was it? 200 yards away, and he came right across the open field to make for a clump of trees. And of course, he told me to fire on it. And I fired on it, and then I was disgusted. You just see your blinking AP shells ricocheting off it. No penetration at all. So she tried for the traps, and I tried to make him touch, but this is too far. So we brought it in, and it bounced off it again, and it went into this wood. I said, well, yes, that's not what she's. I said, well, come out the rain if he knows where we are. We fight it. But he stood there, apparently, it's an attack that was going on for the general. We just see this one tank. But this silly man came back. I guess, but of course, I see it. So we hit him really hard, and his crew bailed out. But it didn't go on fire, but he almost had done some damage to it because he couldn't move, but he never bailed out. So the attack petered out. And they got the MC, tank commander.
Lieutenant Walker.
Aye. So, two nights afterwards, we're in Liga, and all we were getting to see the German bombers was at night time. And we think this was done deliberately just because you were sitting, lying at your side, you can't get to sleep unless the bloody thing comes diving down. I wouldn't have dropped nothing, go away again, and drive down. That stops your sleeping. So, we didn't sleep in the tank, we slept outside the tank. We three were set at the front, One last that's a real up there when they come and they can't sleep. And there's told me that they're two of at the bar. So this thing from doing this. If you come down once you come down free, they've never dropped it. And the fourth thing they have the jobs with pretty over cheap rented with it done. And this they got the bomb, so it couldn't have been very many yards away. But they've done there's not much room zero for the tar. With a blast, one side of the tap with the fumes, and we were all right to have in the blast, and we came out, and the wee gun, the wee lap gun said it was okay, but we went to see the task manager, and he was removed, and we turned them over, and he just went to the LC Bible, the blood, and he was killed with something, and from the back, and they killed him. So this gun was still going about yet, and the bomb was going right in there. So I had to run across this one, and this tank, and I said, excuse me, I was like the end, I said, I think the demo has been killed. What? He said, yes, done. He said, what? I said, I think he's been killed. Right, he said, I'll get the demo now. So he came in, and he said, and very warm on me. And he said, he's dead, and I'm going to sit in the tank. However, now, I never got to any more point. Just think, I think this was done, this was psychologically, I think, but he made sure he didn't get arrested at all, you know, because he didn't have a bomb. So, however, the demo came up. And the man was dead, sat by the dead, and said, he got buried in the morning. So I went to bed in the morning, and the squirrel came and said, now look, he says, your tank okay? So well, we looked through the tank, and I said, all with these little flasks, every one of them had been burst inside with it, the shot with it, and then here on the 75mm gun, the shrapnel had hit it, and it had made a hole in the gun. So it made the 75mm was hopeless, no use. So I put it, I said, well, look, tell you what, you take this tank, the rest of the crew, dump it to the LAD, and they'll fit a barrel for you within, what, an hour. Is it, and come up with, keep an up, Mark, but to come back to you, you'll find us there. Okay. So we went back to the LAD, and we got 5 miles back in the beach, and was in there, the bush was on. I said, well, we'll come back to you, and barrel in 7.5 million. Never mind them, they didn't barrel 7.5 million. There's another tank there. You see, great tank. On there, I get back. And the crew came to say, well, please, because they don't want to lose it. So when we're back, and his colleague said, oh, fine. He said, well, if Dan Harlan's back on that tank over there, he said, join his troop. He says, commander, he says, I want you to take over, commander. He said, I'll make your last couple now. He said, and follow us up lower. He said, there'll be no action at all. He said, but I'll see you tonight. I said, okay.
So you were made a lance corporal, but still a gunner.
Yeah. So a commander, I had to take over the tank.
So you were no longer a gunner. You were going to be the commander of the tank. And you were in Lieutenant Harlan's troop.
Aye. So, we get up a road, and at night time come, before we got under the road, we were in action. So I just had to take orders from Lieutenant Harlan, the troop was out there. So, okay. So, commander, his colleague came and said, you've got issues, you did very well. Because you're a sergeant and you meet each other this time from the north. So that was, I remember a corporal, one stance on one day and then the sergeant the next. But I had the experience of the wireless procedure and everything else, and we were telling one Lieutenant Walker what to do, you know. He was a very good man, pushed through his territory.
And what about your tank crew? Do you remember any of the names at the time, or did they change too often? When you were your tank?
My tank, we lost a few men, but I finished up with. Couple of Farrell was my driver when I finished up that with him. But we lost so many. I know when I finished up, it was Corporal Farrell was my driver. And I can't even know his name.
That's okay. Did you get on well with them? And what was your role as commander? Did it change? You were a sergeant, you were a commander of the tank. Did that change things?
Together, they stayed with me all the time, unless there was somebody wounded, you know, then we'd have got another somebody else, but they all got on very well, and the whole troop was good. We had a very good troop, and Crunky was very good indeed. But the only thing was, I was new troop sergeant.
When was that? That'd be a bit later, though, wouldn't it?
Well, no, very much later, because we were Crunky, and he says, John, the other two sergeants are new to it, and he says, well, you've been with me, so I was new troop sergeant. Not that made any difference, but I mean, it meant I was going to the very front.
Was there anything else? Any other responsibilities, troop sergeant?
Yes, supplying the rations, which is which was, to me, was terrible. But four tanks, 5 men each, and you've got 3 boxes of rations. Now, why couldn't the freedom sort of one box for a tank crew? Now, you have to split these boxes. Now, this is letting you do maybe 4 days work, and you actually do. You have to make sure all your bloody tanks are filled up with petrol. You couldn't get to sleep until the work filled up with petrol, ammunition. Now, you have to split the 3 boxes out and say, well, look, this is it. Now, they did it, they varied. Some would have rice in them, some would have pears in them, and conflict with a wee bugger. He said, I like pears. I said, well, I didn't get pears last time. I said, you did. I'm trying to remember what they got the day before, you know, every 2 days you got there. But it was a bloody nuisance, this 3 boxes within a
meter. That's compost. Can you explain what was in? What was the compost system?
Compost was very good indeed. You had tea, sugar, and milk in one tin. So if you poured it in, you have the whole box, it was there. You'd have separate tea, sugar, and milk as well, a mixture. And you had potatoes and tins, you had Gornicky stew, you had cigarette, tin of cigarettes, you had sweeties. Well, they were first class, but if they'd made one for each tank, that would be free for 4 tanks.
So the division was difficult?
Yes. And the dishing out was difficult because, I mean, my bad job, I dressed it. This is racially good, we had dressed yesterday and I'm not. You can imagine how you feel after a day. You can actually be perfect. However, we've gone well. We did very good, very well. And nope. Again, if you didn't get 10 teeth, you know, you fill your bloody dressing bins with food. You didn't get 10 teeth, some of them. Because you get thrown, come up. Right, you'll be here for about another half hour. You take a quick brew. So that time you just got the same thing as you did in the desert. You've got some earth and you've got petrol in it. And then, you're halfway through, the movement, something's happened with movement. You have to lift the rope and put it back in the tank. And you've got, we've got food, and you have a tea in it, and you dunk it.
Now, we got to the point in Villers-Bocage where you'd had this clash with a tiger, which you'd managed to beat, actually, mainly because it.
The first tiger I've ever seen, and we knocked it out. And I think that's why, quite I think it was this was leaving a bit now. I know this was his leading infantry apparently, but it stopped the infantry from coming any further. That's how we got the infantry.
Now, what happened next?
Well,
again, I don't expect you to do it day by day, but what's the next thing you remember?
Well, we were told we were leaving Conn, and we thought we'd have got to Conn long before we did. And we were told we were going in towards Conn, and we got within about 2 miles. You could see Conn, we were. And then we were told they were bringing over these blockbusters, these bombs called blockbusters. And we had to withdraw so many hundred yards. So we did this, and these boys come over at an RAF, and honestly, you think you could have put them down with a catapult. And they came over in big waves, and the 88 meters was fired from the centre of Cone and fired at them. And there were very few hit because they were that low. It had to be a direct hit, because they were bursting bombs above the planes. And they flattened it. This is where the big blocks, that's why we get so far back. But we were told afterwards, the Jerry's had seen us moving back, and we were some company, and moved out there. So when we went in to get it, they went back in again. So this went on for weeks until it was getting beyond the joke, and we lost a lot of infantry men. But then it was well defended, and we were on a big fort. However, they got eventually, they pulverized the bombs, and we went in. And it worked out amazingly. It was great. It was very stunning. And yet, look, grotesque. I mean, all these flattened buildings, and this bloody chimney still standing.
Now, were you involved in before that in sort of Epsom or Goodwood? The
Goodwood, yeah.
But not Epsom.
No, what was it? Market Garden? Was it Market Garden? Or something?
Market Garden's Arnhem. But Epsom, Goodwood, Epsom's June and end of June, and Goodwood's sort of mid July.
We didn't make it over the Epsom and Goodwood. We didn't make it out till afterwards, you know. See the Market Garden. Oh, no.
Now, what do you remember of any of the fighting round Carn?
Fighting was grim, but I think most of it was done. We lost an awful lot of people in tanks because of the fact in the Bocage was terrible. You could, a tank could be like this, lying a wee passageway, you'd never see it. You go across a field and you lose about 4 tanks and it took you, and it was quick as that. As quick as that, and you never seen them. And
so you were ambushed, basically, and before you could do anything, you'd have lost a couple of tanks.
And then you found out
Now, is this the first time you'd met them?
Yeah.
Could you describe what they were? They're not, people used to know, but they don't know now.
Well, you get a man who's standing very literally like a long tube, but with a projector at the end of it. Now, he had to make sure that you didn't know this tube about the tube, because the explosive just shoot it out. And he would fire this thing, and it would hit the tank, stick to the tank, and the projector would shoot it, and it would hit the tank. Now, you could stand, if you got up here, and a man could stand behind a tree, lead through your past, and shoot it with a box, and go, we hit him behind the tank, your pet was the way that you need to sit on top of it, sit on the pet. You never seen him yet. So, when we lost a lot of tanks that way, we were hit once, but didn't do any damage, so it didn't come through. But we were told then to look out for them. So I told them, we went to the hill. I said, well, then, you and your driver, keep your eyes open on both sides of the road, because I'll be looking further up. And operator, he could be scared, though, he was really loading the tank and going to listen to the others. I said, now look at the top. I said, but if you see anything moving in the ditches at the side of the road, don't wait immediately to shoot, because there could be bazookas. So we're going up this road, and the lap gun lit fire. I said, what's wrong? He said, there's some moving in this ditch. I didn't see anything, so I had a glass of water. I didn't see anything, but fair enough, we'll see in a minute or two. And I had this crying. So I jumped into the front of the place, and I went in the ditch, and there's an old farmer and his dog, and my dog got up with a head, buried the bullets. She was killed. So, me, I couldn't speak French, and I told him, but you should wave the white flag or something, because I couldn't have been the driver, the gunner. I couldn't ask you, but we try to say we were very sorry, we were in a hemisphere. But if he'd even just made the white flag or even put his hand up, they're going to have to see us to move them. So that was the other thing, was that we don't bring them in, these people.
Some units used to just fire and as they went, machine guns anyway, whether they saw something or not, but you didn't do that?
No, according to me, it was just wasting something, you just wasting that. Only thing we did that, and if we're going through a small wood, the woods on either side. I would go down the road, belt down the road. Now, there's no point to me firing straight ahead because you can see the road. But come get the back of me, another gun, one to the left, one to the right, one to the left. They were firing all the way down. They keep their heads down so we can get through. They never fired any heads here or anything. That was just close after the street.
Any other incidents you remember from that early fighting once you landed in Normandy?
It went on non-stop, it seemed to go on for days and days and days. You wouldn't know you won't get any sleep at all because you got in at night.
How did the fatigue affect you?
Well, at one time we got these tablets to take at night, and they told you that you went, okay, they did it for 3 days, but after that, no need to do it, sir.
They sound like amphetamines.
It would give us strength to get on through the night, you know, but after the third, fourth night, we were sugar.
How did they make you feel, these tablets? Because, I mean, they're considered a drug now, aren't they?
You didn't feel it, but then again, you were that tensed up. You thought maybe your own feelings as well, you know, you didn't know what was happening to us. They told us what they were, they told us what they were getting and what for purpose. And it just seemed like we got the little things, morphine.
The amphetamines, I mean, would you actually take them?
Why? We give them a door to take them.
And they did keep you going for about this 3 day business.
Right, well, we didn't know if the kid was going, but it was his own, how you were worked up. But again, after the 4th day, they told us we felt jiggered.
So you felt worse then? And how did the tiredness affect you? You know, I mean, could you still do your duty properly?
Well, yes, we still do that. As I say, you have to hold a case to get pulled up with time, and that gives you an indication of where you get because when you're going up the road, and a lovely morning, and you know that there's something in front of you, that's the enemy, you know, when you're reading that, you see whether it could come anything. And how I was never. Seriously, I don't know.
Did you get nervous when you were doing that? You in yourself?
Well, this is it. You ever frightened the eyes? I said, no, because when most of the war went up, when you felt the war was getting nearer, finishing. Now you went through all this, maybe it should. But the biggest part was to try not to show it to your crew. That was the biggest. And I didn't know, because you're sitting on the top of them. And when I was a gunner, always a deep tank gunner, they were never shown any fear. And I thought, oh, the first show fear is going straight through the crew. And they used to say, this got mad. But me, I wasn't mad, I was as frightened as this, but frightened that maybe more so than me.
And what was it like being commander of the tank? I mean, dealing with things like, you know, you're going down this. I mean, the net, the regimental net and things like that must have been very important.
But, I mean, I was used to it. I mean, I'd been in it for. And, I mean, I knew the way the cardinal went and the scummy. And it was the same thing all the time. And it was really. And our nets were first class, and our cords were first class. And then you got a wee board, and I couldn't go back. I mean, tell what happened after the. After the con, we got a lot of new officers. Now, the casualties were being heavy. So the colonel, the original is in the loop, he came up and said, it's called me that. He's done, he said, we're putting a young officer over here. He said, it's just going to Sandhurst, he'd never been asked before, but I wanted to set him in the lap gunner's place. Put the lap gunner back to BS underneath there. He said, so he can listen to the wireless procedure and watch what's going on. He said, and give him a bit. He said, you know this. Okay. So we went into action one day, and he came out all right. So we had our evening meal. So after the meal, the gunner comes in, the sergeant says, this young officer, he's had his meal, says, but he's not cleaned his mess tin. So we all cleaned your own plates and mess tins after the feast. He said, no. I said, well, just put it back in the tank where it should be, as it is. Okay. So, next morning, I went to get a breakfast and come in. So, sir, I said, nobody washes my. I said, nobody washes. Yeah, I said, everybody washes their own plates, sir. Of course, this is pretty ridiculous. I said, well, you can go and see his colleague with him. So, he came up and he's been too easy. And his colleague came up and told us, he didn't know. I said, well, I told him, I said, I used it. And these were things that. But after that, he was already mixed in with the rest. But then I think he was used to the officer's mess business, you know, where you can get his plates and he washes for you. And poor soul, after about 2 or 3 weeks, he got a tank of his own and lost his head the first day. Then AP, he got off his shoulders.
And he was acting as, not gunner, he was acting as co-driver.
Co-driver, yeah. I mean, he loved gun, I was a piece of gun, but he never used it. It was just to give him an experience, listen to the radio all the time and how it was operated, you know.
Were you aware that there were lots of casualties going on? Because there weren't that many tanks and they were losing, you know.
We were. This is what we found in our own troop, well, you knew your own and you knew your own squadron. But after Corn, we met as a regiment, and when you looked round and seen the faces, new faces, you realised how much you'd lost, you know. But you keep your own wee squadron, your own wee troop. But even then, and other troops away from you. You had a cup, but you don't know if there were fatal casualties or what, do you?
And what's the next thing? After Khan,
so
there was a sort of operations around the Falaise Gap, wasn't it? And
we went through Falaise Gap, and that's where the Germans lost a hell of a lot of troops there and the vehicles. But then the RAF went down on them, because it was such a small gap, they had to get along the Falaise Gap, and the RAF. And these, what we call tiffers, the typhoons with the rockets, they destroyed most of the German army. Destroyed most of them through that gap.
What was it like? I mean, was there much sign of that having taken place?
Oh, yes. And we went down to the Falaise Gap. We've seen on the way up all the vehicles lying strewn about the place, tanks as well. Some with the tanks blown off these tiffers.
And what next? Because the pace of the whole advance quickened up.
And we went into, we didn't go to Paris. We went up towards Brussels.
What about reception from civilians, French civilians? I mean, would you start, once you got away from the coast, would you start seeing them?
Well, yes, yes. I mean, they were, I think the coastal ones, now, we thought they were rather friendly towards his enemy, but when you can understand, they were there for about 3 or 4 years under occupation, you know. But one little man, first French man we've seen, just after, just before we went to build the cars, this little French man came running across his farm with a bottle in his hand and TV glasses. He comes jumping up in the tight and he comes running up. He says, Calvados! No, I never heard the Calvados in my life. I didn't know what Calvados was. He says, what's it was? French whiskey! French whiskey! And he said, there's this white nose, two crows. He said, we'd keep this for back until we came back from after leaving France. But the rest of them seemed awful stunning. And at that time, new villages, the three French people would go around picking up the women collaborators in the square and shaving their hair off.
Did you see that? I mean,
yeah, why? We've seen them doing it.
How did you feel about that? Cause
well, I'll be perfectly frank, but some months ago, I'm going to look for some of these women that were wearing the hair squares, but they came out to take a woman they were. But no, we didn't see very much, so we've seen them, but I thought it was rather cool. But this is the fourth day, they collaborated with us. And then again, you can't live with people for 3 or 4 years without getting some sort of relationship with them, you know.
And so you moved through France towards Brussels.
Yeah, into Brussels. And remember coming off Brussels with the Dutch, the Germans.
There was no more fight in particular in this period?
No, because Brussels was practically empty, the German troops. Because we went into the met the Garde Nord, and we went into this place where this woman took us in to get a photograph taken off the tank, and get a photograph taken, and back on the tank again. So then we went from Brussels, and I think we were meant to go up into Holland, up towards the Scheldt, but we didn't. We went across to Nijmegen, up at Nijmegen.
Was that part of the Arnhem campaign?
Yeah. Then wait a minute, we went up this before we got to. We went up as far as the German border. We were at a place called half the village was in Germany, the other half was in Holland. So it was near Christmas time, because this is where the Germans put in the last big push, just before the Ardennes, because we were in a little village.
So Arnhem didn't really affect you that much?
We went up to Durham.
Was that before that or after?
We were up at Aachen, was the name of the place. No, because the Ardennes. Because we were up at Aachen, and the colonel came up. It was winter, but the snow was on the ground, and everything was quiet, so these aeroplanes came up.